Video number three, last time I left you with sort of the two options that you might be considering. One is you're in the business world and you want to do more ministry, and so if you did business a little bit better, more enterprise, you'd have more free time to do ministry, and we need people like that. Or you're in ministry or you want to be in ministry, but you need to take care of your family. You need to be a blessing to those around you. And so you need a way to save money, make money, so you can do the ministry that you want to do. And I mentioned tent making at the end of that last video. I want to talk about that. Make sure you do the reading. There's a lot of reading on this. I'm having you read one guy's discussion of it. He talks about the whole history of Paul and a lot of the different passages. There's a lot of different people's opinions about Paul and how he did this or what he did do and what he didn't do. I'm going to just sort of give you a brief overview, but there's like 30 pages or so to read. Make sure you read all of it. It's really good stuff. But sort of just a general view, what does the Bible have to say about tent-making ministry? Acts chapter 18. This is that little section that talks about Paul. And he, Paul, found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently from Italy with his wife Priscilla. Because Claudius was the emperor, had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. So there was the persecution of the Jews, they left Rome. So there's all these refugees coming, and Paul, being a Jew himself and a Roman citizen, was uniquely qualified to talk to them. So he meets with them in some ways over business. They weren't Christians yet. He went to see them, and because he was of the same trade, so it was a business connection, he stayed with them and worked, for they were tent makers by trade. And we assume that Paul was too. Somewhere along the line, Paul learned this trade, and it was something he could do wherever he went. So he's working, first of all, with these people who are not yet Christians. And then on the weekends, he reasoned in the synagogues every Sabbath and tried to persuade the Jews and Greeks about Christ. So he's doing ministry where he can, but he's working at the same time. And because it was a tent-making thing, we now call this way of doing things tent-making. So some more relevant verses. There's not just the Acts. There's other verses that sometimes people use to say, well, maybe Paul, you know, is this the way that Paul thought everyone should do it? Should everyone be a tent maker? Should there be no full-time church workers? Or, you know, how are we to think about this? 1 Corinthians 9, Paul says, am I not free? Am I not an apostle? He's defending his leadership with some of those from Jerusalem. Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? People were questioning whether he was qualified to be an apostle. Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? He's talking to people that he's reached. You know, isn't the proof in the pudding, or the proof is in the fruit of the tree? If to others I am not an apostle, I am at least one to you. For you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. So the proof is, do you have disciples? You're a disciple maker if you have disciples. This is my defense to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to eat and drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? He's talking about Peter, one of Jesus' disciples. Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? So he's saying, don't we have the right to be supported by the work that we do? In other words, be like full-time church workers. And it sounds like he's saying, well, we have the right, but we don't actually do it. And so now he's going to sort of justify full-time working for God. Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? The idea is, well, no one. I mean, someone pays the soldier. Who plants a vineyard without eating any of its fruit? Who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I see these things on a human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain. you know, a muzzle keeps the ox from eating the grain that he's stomping along the grain to unhook the grain from the stalk. And the idea was, you want to feed the ox. You want him to eat some of the fruit of his labor, or he'll stop working. Is it for the oxen that God is concerned, but not human beings, in other words? Does he not certainly speak for our sake? It was written for our sake because the plowman should plow in hope, and the thresher should thresh in the hope of sharing in the crop. People work, and somehow they get the fruit of their work to take care of their own lives. If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others share this rightful claim on you, do not we even more? So he's saying he has a right to be paid for his working in the kingdom. But now, get this, nevertheless, we have not made use of this right. But we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple? So the Old Testament system, the Levites, all the rest of the tribes gave of their tithes so that the people working in the temple could eat. And those who serve at the altar share in the sacrificial offering. So they brought the animals, they sacrificed them, but then the Levites got to eat some of that meat. In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision. So he's saying I have the right to be paid as a full-time church worker, but I have not taken advantage of that right. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. For necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. I have to preach the gospel. I don't do it for money. I've got to do it regardless of any money that comes my way. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not my own will, I am still entrusted with stewardship. So I don't do this because I want to. I do this because I have to. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as to not make full use of my right in the gospel. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became Jews, in order to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I become as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ. And why do I do all these things? Why do I sacrifice all these things? Why do I, give up my rights to things? That I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I become weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessing. Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one receives the prize? So I run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable one. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. So Paul goes into this whole lengthy talk. He's saying I have a right, just like all the other apostles, to actually be supported by the church as I'm doing this Christian work. And he uses biblical examples. He uses just rational examples. But then he turns around and says, but I have not made use of these rights. And I've not made use of these rights because I want to be more effective. I don't want people accusing me of preaching the gospel to make money. I'm preaching the gospel to reach people with the love of Christ. It was something that was given to me free, and so I'm giving it to others free. Now, is he saying that people that get full-time pay shouldn't? No. But he's saying, for him, it's the most effective way to go. And so he made his living doing this tent thing and making these things and selling them on the side or being hired to do this. But then he kept doing his ministry. The point of doing the work was so he could do the ministry and give it free of charge. Well, why did Paul do this? He didn't have to, but why did he? Number one, credibility. Especially when you're reaching people who do not know Christ. I mean, I remember when I planted a church, I went around the neighborhood and I knocked on people's doors. And I had a few questions that I asked them. I asked them, first of all, whether they went to church. And if they didn't, I said, great, you're the one that I want to talk to because I want to learn something from you. And then the second question I asked was, why don't you think people don't go to church? Why do you think people don't go to church? Now, if I had asked them why they didn't go to church, they would have been offended. But when I asked them, why do you think people in general don't go to church? I'm asking for their opinion. And you know what? People were happy to give it to me. I was the learner, and I'm coming to them saying, you're the expert. Please inform me. And people told me. They had no problem telling me. And guess what? They ended up telling me why they didn't go to church, really. And the number one reason they thought that people didn't go to church, which meant this is the number one reason why they didn't, is that sermons are boring and irrelevant. I had one guy told me, he said, you know, if you don't preach a sermon, I'll come to your church. But the second answer, the second most popular answer that people gave for why people don't go to church is churches are more interested in your money than they are in you. That was number two. So people out there, non-Christians in general, have a negative view of Christianity. Maybe it's from, you know, the television preachers and so on. You know, put your hand on the screen and give me some money and some good thing will happen. I don't know. But people have this sense that someone's after money. So Paul goes into a community and he says, you know, I'm not doing this for money. You don't have to pay anything. It's free. The gospel is free, and what I'm doing for you is free. And he won credibility. This person just preaches the gospel because he has to preach the gospel. It's not to get anything. Number two, identification. Why did Paul work? Identification. People could relate to him. You know, in some ways, now, you know, I'm 50% time at my church and I do something other things that help support me. But for most of my church career, I was a full-time pastor. And when I would stand up and say, you know, we should give money for this cause, or I would say, you know, I would give examples from my own life, you know, about, you know, working hard for the Lord and how we should sacrifice and all of that. A lot of times when I talk to people, they would just say, well, yeah, you should do that. You're the pastor. It's your job to be good. I used to say that to people, you know. I said, you know, you people pay me to be good. You pay me money to be good. And I said, you people in the church, you're good for nothing. you do it and you don't get paid. But because Paul didn't get money, he could, you know, people could identify with him. He had to work too. People work hard. It's difficult. They have to take care of their family. And now Paul is going to come to them and say, you know, what you really need is Christ and you need the church and all these things you need. And you know, if he was getting paid, you know, and lived a whole different life, people could just look at him and go, what do you know about my life? What do you know about what I need? You have no clue what it's like to be an ordinary working person. So because Paul was supporting himself, Paul knew exactly what it was like to be a working person and all the complexities of being out there in the world. And number three, modeling. Paul was modeling something that the people could do. You know, when I'm a full-time worker, you know, and the things that I do and how I, you know, live my life, most people can't do what I do. They don't have the time that I have. They don't have the freedom to, you know, sit down and have coffee with people in the middle of the day. They're at work. Their life is nothing like mine. So all my talk, all my modeling is like, well, yeah, you can do these things, but I can't live like you. Second Thessalonians, Paul writes, now we command you, brothers, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from any brother who is walking in idleness and not in accord with the tradition that you received from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to imitate us, because we were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with toil and labor, we worked night and day, just like you, that we might not be a burden to any of you. It was not because we did not have the right, but to give you in ourselves an example to imitate. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command: if anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. For we hear that some among you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busy bodies. Now such persons we command and encourage in the Lord Jesus to do their work quietly and to earn their own living. So Paul and the people that he was with could say, this is, you know, our life is no different than yours. We have to work. We have to take care of ourselves. And we preach the gospel. We try to make a difference in the people's lives around us. And so follow what we're doing. We can relate to you. You can relate to us. There's other advantages to this whole tent-making way of thinking. Number one, more people can try to plant a church. If a person is supplying their own needs and then they have some time to try to help others, they can do a small little thing and see where it goes. A lot of church planting at the denominational level requires, you know, a full-time person, and someone has to get some money to help pay for that full-time person, and then that person goes and he tries to gather people, and there's a huge investment into something that may or may not work. A lot of church plants, you know, they get started and then they fold up. But in some ways, number two, every convert becomes a church potential church planter. In some ways, every single Christian, you know, they're making money, so they're taking care of their family, and now they're trying to influence and make a difference in the lives of other people, and they can start with one. Why not? And if you get one, well, why not reach two? And if you get two, why not three? And who knows? Eventually, you get a small group. And if you have one small group, why not try for two? And maybe that's as far as you go. And maybe it doesn't become a church. But every single Christian is at least trying. If one out of ten actually did something, we'd have millions of churches all over the place without the investment of all kinds of money that may or may not develop into a church. Number three, money does not drive ministry. People moved by the Holy Spirit drives the ministry. Right now in most church planting, it's the money. If we had more money, we could plant more churches. So money is the determining factor on whether we're going to have another church plant. You know, the first 300 years, there were no church buildings. So every single Christian that had a house, that lived in a house, could be a potential church plant. Every single one of them. But then after 300 years, Charlemagne became, Constantine, the emperor at that time, became a Christian. All of a sudden, he made the whole Roman Empire Christians, and they had all these pagan religious places, and they turned them into churches. And then, you know, when you get a big crowd, you want a professional person, and all of a sudden we started hiring people and average people. You know, you can't have a church now in a house because that's not good enough. You need a bigger thing, and we sort of carried on that tradition ever since. We have a sense of what a church should be, and it needs a nice cement floor. It needs, you know, so now it needs money. And without enough money, you can't get it going. I spent a year in the Philippines. And you know, in the early days of the church planting movement in the Philippines, churches could go anywhere. You put up some grass things, you know, bamboo, bing, bada, boom, a church is built, in a week. It didn't cost much, and any community could do it. But then someone got a cement floor. Well, they got some money from the United States to put in a cement floor. Now everyone thinks that if you don't have a cement floor, you can't have a church. But people can't afford the cement floor. So now they need to go out and find money to have this cement floor. And so all of a sudden, church planting is being held back by cement floors and finding the money for a cement floor. So this whole idea of tent making, if we had had a thought that any person can do this, can try this. Now, I'm not against cement floors. What I'm against is making church planting so professional and so that's part of what's behind Christian Leaders Institute. Take a class, see where it goes. Start. Do a little bit ministry. See what happens. Take another class. Be equipped. Do a little bit more ministry. Will that become a church? I don't know. Will it become a half a church? I don't know. Will it become just a small group that joins a church? I don't know. But if we had more and more people do it, thousands and thousands of people doing that, you know, we're going to move, you know, the kingdom bar further down the trail. Well, there are some dangers to tent making as well. Number one, poorly trained people end up planting churches. You know, if it becomes easy and anyone can do it, then a lot of people do it. And some people who do it who shouldn't do it. They've been trained poorly. So that's what Christian Leaders Institute is about, too. We want to get the training to the people. We want people doing stuff, but we want people to know what they're doing it and why they're doing it and to be strongly biblically based. And so that's, you know, you're taking these classes, not just this class, but the other classes that you're taking, take as many as you can, be equipped as best as you can, so that if you do a tent-making ministry, you do it in a biblical manner. Number two, tent-making and ministry get too intertwined. Okay, so a person is trying to do ministry, maybe planting a church, but then he's got to make a living, and sometimes what church planters like this tent-making church planters will do is sort of get them confused. And it's like, you got to join my church, but you have to support my business. And you don't want to put those two together. You know, I'm trying to do my business thing to care of my family so I can offer you the gospel free of charge. I don't want to offer you the gospel and then somehow coerce you into supporting my making a living. So, but that's a danger. People can put those two together. In fact, they can make sort of their tent making thing the number one thing, and ministry is just the way to get people to support their tent making. Number three, people reached may not take on their share of the responsibility for the church being planted. I once planted a church where we took no offering. I thought, you know, I'm going to try. You know, the number two reason people thought were sort of negative about church, you know, from the poll that I had taken, the number two reason was they thought churches are more interested in their money than in them. And so I thought, you know, I'm gonna put that whole thinking to bed. So I actually planted a church where I said, we're not going to take an offering. So my wife and I rented the space. We had people come. We had about 100 people come. And, you know, the next week they came again. There was no offering. And at the time where we had an offering, I said, you know, we're not going to take an offering, but take the money that you'd give as an offering and do something with it. Help somebody. You know, see the needs out there. Don't give me the money and then I have to figure out all the needs and how to help people. No, you do it. You help somebody. Well, you know, I think it was week four, someone came up to me and said, well, how does this place, who's paying the rent on this place? I said, my wife and I. Oh, well, can we help in that? Yeah, okay. So little by little, some people did that, but a lot of people did nothing. So the problem sometimes with tent making is, you know, I'm paying for all the work that I do, and you just let me. And you sit back, and you just let other people take on all the responsibility. So that's, you know, like with parenting, sometimes you got to give people responsibility and sometimes paying and taking the offering. I don't know whether that was a good idea or not. I don't know if ultimately having a church without an offering is good. I know a lot of churches in the community were not happy with me because they were taking offering and we weren't. And they were like, hey, what kind of church is this? You know, it's biblical. And maybe it is. You know, it's just something that I was trying. So I don't know. You know, in the end, I wasn't sure which is the right thing to do. But the ultimate goal is to get people to take responsibility. And the reason I wasn't taking an offering is because I wanted them to be responsible. You be responsible for the money that God has given you. Ultimately, you are responsible to reach the needs around you, not me. You give me the money, you know, I got to figure out the ministry and what to do with it and to help people and so on. You do it. But so anyway, one of the dangers of the tent making thing is people just let you take care of everything and they don't chip in. So we'll be talking more about this tent making thing as we go. But it's a biblical concept. It isn't necessarily the thing that you always have to do. Here at CLI, we're not against full-time ministry. But we realize, you know, from hearing a lot of your stories, that full-time ministry is not where you're going to start. And so you need to find a way to sort of do, a little bit of half and half. To somehow make a living, take care of your family, but also have the freedom and the time to do ministry.